And I've titled it Congressional Tyranny, 10 years of our post-Civil War history. And I want to open with the remark that it's a miracle that we are still one nation. And we are one nation, we are one people, and what makes us one nation is the fact that we live under the same principles. And from time to time, we forget what those principles are. And when that happens, we begin to polarize instead of unite. Another aspect that we've learned from our own story is that our worst enemies are ourselves. The worst enemy we have is within our own selves, within our own nation, just as within our own person. And we do battle with our own conscience, with our own principles, as it were, with the light we own. And I believe it is a miracle that we do exist as one people. It's an historical miracle that we can speak on this side of a civil war and say we're still one.
Yes.
And we are still speaking as one people as we meet tonight. And from time to time, we have to remember that we are one people with one constitution, one body of laws. And it is a constitution that is the best body of laws for imperfect human beings. It was made for the imperfection of human beings and humanity, and which allows the greatest liberty for the individual. Mm-hmm. And that's how we deal with humanity, is give him the greatest liberty he can afford to have and to find his own place in this world. To find his own place, not for anyone to put him in his place, mm-hmm. but to find his own place and to permit that. And not for him to interfere with anyone else's life, liberty, and property without punishment. Remember, perhaps, also, that though we are one people, that we have 50 varieties of Americans. Okay? Heinz 57, no, Heinz 50 maybe. But there are 50 varieties of Americans. And we're supposedly the California variety. And even in California, there are varieties of California. And there are many counties that are involved. So understand that though we have one people, we are a variety, a diverse nation. We are a nation of all nations. Every nation is represented in this country. Every nation is represented, I'm told, in the city of San Francisco. No wonder we're all confused. Okay. What's an American? American is not shall we say, ethnicity. It's an idea. It's an idea. It has no color. It has no gender. It's universal. It's eternal. It's divine. And so we want to land on those principles that make us one people, regardless of the variety, whatever garden variety we say we are, whatever fruit we are, whatever vegetable we are, okay, whatever nut we are, all right, excuse the metaphors. We are still from the same idea. And history will teach us what those principles are. When we go far afield from them, we will find us coming back to them. That's how we get back to them when we go away. Do you understand that? And that's the beauty of truth. History will teach you what's true. If by experience. Okay? History teaches us what is true for all men and nations by experience. And the further along we are in history, the more we have to learn, the more we have as evidence of what is and what is not. What is self-destructive and what gives life? That's all we want, is to live, right? We just want to get out of here alive, some people say. What is self-destructive, where you don't go, and what gives you life, promotes life, until real death comes, okay? Natural death comes. So I want to begin with a presupposition that I began with last week, because this topic is as well an extension of the Emancipation Proclamation idea. And it all, because they were all under the umbrella of something called the American Civil War, when we practically self-destructed. And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. We talked about rebellion of the South. But Reconstruction is all about the rebellion of the North. Okay? So we have rebellion of the South, but we also begin to see for 10 years a rebellion that comes right out of the North, and which doesn't display the most beautiful aspect of ourselves as a people. Again, there's a Northern Rebellion, it's a Southern Rebellion, but it's still rebellion against one, against lawful authority. A rebellion is rising up and overthrowing, attempting to overthrow lawful authority. And so the lawful authority that we're speaking about, again, is this body of laws we have all consented to by covenant, the Constitution of the United States. It's not a contract, it's by covenant. We promise ourselves, and you know, sometimes we're not very good at keeping promises. Sometimes we keep some and don't keep others. It's amazing we're still here. This whole nation is held together by an agreement, a handshake, if you will. Not by, you don't go to jail for breaking the Constitution. You just break it or ignore it, truly, in a sense. So it's held together by good faith of the people, by us trusting in the good faith of each other, that when push comes to shove, we're going to come right back to the Constitution and resolve things. And we had a hard time doing that in this emotional time in our history called the American Civil War. How did we get there? I'm going to just try to summarize it again and bring it before you. There would not have been a civil war unless America as a whole began to let go of the principles of what I call representative government. We let it go. We were young and foolish and let it go. You ever do that? All right?
Lots of it.
and we let go of representative government for something called popular government. That's just so adolescent, isn't it? Juvenile? To go what's popular, right? Go, it's easier, it's just less rugged to be self-responsible rather than just let be swept away. Just be swept away by the fashion. By again, what is agreeable to the times and actually not only the time, the circumstances. Mm-hmm. You don't have to think in a democratic republic, right? You really don't. You just go the way that is again fashionable or popular. We let go of exercising something called local self-government. I believe the times in which we're facing today, which is national economic pain, is going to drive us back to the right idea of economics. Whatever that is, it's going to drive us, because of the pain, we go there, ouch, we're going to get away from the pain. And that pain is going to drive us to common sense, life-giving economic principles. What's going to save my skin, okay? Because if you don't save your skin, who's going to save your skin? Okay? It's your responsibility and self and your good and your self interest to look after yourselves in the right sense. You know what the difference between self interest and selfish interest is? Don't confuse the two. Because you're taking care of you and your own, don't be accused of being selfish. Selfish is when You promote your interests at the expense of somebody else. That's selfishness. But self-interest is good. It's goodly. Because it means that you're not relying on someone else to take care of your interests. You're not taking care of your interests at somebody else's expense. That's good. That's loving your neighbor. And so this idea of local self-government, taking care of your local interests, we let that go for what? Gaining the prize of national power in the competition between political factions. This is 21st century America right here. Mm-hmm. And we have yet to be cured from party politics. This is what divides us at least into two factions, two camps, vying for power and control, whatever the cost, sacrificing principle for what? Popular rule, popular control, and overriding local interests for party interests. And again, not taking care of our local sphere. They go political principles for the arbitrary collective will of the majority that is in society. And so letting society determine what happens locally. Now, how did that happen? Again, that's the right definition. I submit to you for your consideration again that in reading history, what happened? Reason going to divine revelation was let go for reason guided by self-revelation and self-realization. That's what happened. There was a philosophy coming from, wafted from Europe, that dealt with truth comes, right, from yourself. Not from any divine source, yourself. Self-government was let go for self-reliance, trusting self rather than trusting in the guidelines that we have given to us by revelation. Local self-government was let go for nationalization of local matters. That is exactly where we are today. Individual liberty of conscience was let go for social conscience and the collective sharing of guilt. And again, we're living in a time where guilt is shared, where wealth is shared, right? Where everything, property is shared, but where there is this sharing idea, communal, carried out. The idea that civil government using its power specifically for the protection, and that's what civil government simply is to do, is to secure and protect life, liberty, and property. And that idea is let go for the purpose of civil government using its powers for the enforcement of a democratic social good and morality, imposing, again, matters which belong only to personal individual conscience. This is the idea of having a righteous government, making people right by law. No law has ever made anyone right or moral. And that's a wrong concept of civil government. And that is a misuse of civil government. Now, the physical destruction that came forth out of the Civil War, by invading Union forces, was tremendous. And everything was upheaved in the South. And slavery had actually been flattened. But with all the physical devastation, geographic destruction of property, confiscation, if you will, and with the release of slaves, now called freedmen, there was nothing to take its place. Please, if we're going to destroy, have something better to take its place. That's one lesson we learned from the Civil War. When you go in to destroy, what will you have to take its place? And there was a vacuum, absolute vacuum. There are two things that the Civil War, Reconstruction, so-called, had to deal with. How were you going to bring 11 Confederate states back into proper relationship with the rest of the states? See? Now, the enemies, how are they going to be reconciled? How are you going to reconcile 11 enemy states to back into the Union with the other states? What's the right disposition? What's the right attitude? There are two, and we took one. We took the wrong one. Okay, naturally. Okay, there are ways we go about it. We took the wrong one. What were we going to do with emancipated slaves? Whose responsibility was it then? to care for these emancipated slaves. There are two ways to go about it. We took the wrong one. It's still unresolved.
Yeah.
Yes,
and the relationship between each of our states is still bitter. It's hidden. Now, we decided we weren't going to shoot each other anymore, but we didn't stop hating each other. Okay? That didn't get rid of the sores and the scars and the stories and the abuses. We decided that we couldn't live without each other, but we couldn't live with each other either. Sounds like family, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's a love-hate relationship. And by the way, you know, in the times that we're talking about, men resolve things violently. It was a violent age. Do you realize that? I mean, you don't like your face, you just punch him.
Yeah.
It was that rough. The old West was there. California was just, you know, we were violent people by nature. As a people, we were very rough. We've been sissified since then. Sissified and sissified since then. We're so afraid of our anger, we're not going to pick up a gun against each other. In fact, we're going to turn our guns in. We're so afraid of what we might do with them. Okay? But that's what happened since. That has caused us to be so afraid of our violent nature. But we can be very violent as a people. We were. And we got killed. Over 600,000 were killed. We killed each other. Right? 600,000 died in that war. More than in any other war we participated in. Most of them died from diseases and from injuries. But nevertheless, 600,000 of our sons and husbands and fathers gone, and at our own hands. Families against each other. That was an awful time. It's amazing we can live to speak of it this way, and are not two nations, are not, again, warring with each other, but it had come to that point. And so those two things that we're going to address today, the Confederate reunion, if you will, or dissolvement of the Confederacy and rejoining the United States of America, and then what about the freedmen? What was their plight? And I'm just going to make it out here. I believe that because of congressional interference, or called tyranny, we slowed the process down. Anytime government interferes with any problem in a country, understand that, that has to deal with relations with people, it makes it worse. Okay, it makes it worse, not better. That's a hard lesson to learn. Finally, because the Reconstruction experience led to an increase in bitterness, not decrease. It made the bitterness before the Civil War worse, not better. We didn't come out of this better. Some history books will like to tell you that we came out better. No, barely alive, barely a country. At all. They like to sugarcoat it. It's not pretty. Not at all. But history teaches us what's true and what's not true. We have to look at it. And the intensification of the racial issue, if there was prejudice, if there is racism to the point where inferiority of one race juxtaposes the purity of another, it only intensified the resentment of one toward another. It compounded the issue. Do you understand? It just compounded, and it set the black man further backward than forwarding him. He was a victim of slavery and of the South and Northern do-gooders. Don't forget that. Right. Well-intentioned people do harm sometimes because of their approach. You know, you just can't, by flight of pen, undo wrong. Wrong is not undone by law, or the letter of the law. And out of that came intensified party wrangling. The South became one party because in self-defense, mm-hmm. provoked. And then we have, again, this party division intensified. And we were, again, a nation geographically one. But we were, in fact, internally subdivided in parties, rather than, again, respect for each division, the states, local states. So let's look at this timeline that I have and just get an overview of what is occurring in this post-war period called Reconstruction. This Reconstruction is like surgery, okay? It's physical. It's only physical Reconstruction. It's and plastic surgery, as you will, but it wasn't put together to the point where it could really heal properly. In 1863, we began last time, this is in January. Again, the Emancipation Proclamation did not free all the slaves, only a certain number. And this is a military expedient. It had nothing to do with being anti-slavery. It was a military measure. And I believe it's been romanticized and made more than it really is. We have to look at what Lincoln was concerned about was to save the Union. And he got to the point in 1863, 2-3 years into the war, that he had to do all he could to bring an end to the war. It was war. It had to be ended. And the only way you can end a war is not through ceasefire. Okay. I'm ducking. You cannot end any war by ceasefire. It only delays. War is only ended when the aggressor surrenders. That's the ugliness of war. You have to bring it to the end of it. The end of war. There's no peace unless the perpetrator, the aggressor, absolutely waves the white flag. And that's what happened here. Appomattox, General Lee, waves a white flag. That's how the war was ended. And that was brought about with many issues or many steps. Emancipation Proclamation was one of those. It was a political move. He did not free all the slaves, just those in certain areas that were named in the proclamation. You have to read it closely. It was a measure of battle and war, not social goodness. Okay. He was anti-slavery, but he didn't act. He had no authority as president to free the slaves. He did have as commander-in-chief to proclaim slaves and rebellious states to be set free once conquered. Do you see what I'm saying here? That's just the history of it. We go down, we've done the Gettysburg Address. The Battle of Gettysburg was the turning point of the Civil War, the address of the cemetery, November of that year. And then we had Lincoln's proclamation of amnesty and Reconstruction. And he began as commander-in-chief, and of course Congress didn't like that. By the way, we're speaking about congressional tyranny. Three departments of our national government, that is the Congress, executive, the presidency, and the judicial. Three separate departments. Any one of these can become tyrannical. All right, tyrannical. That is, they usurp authority. They assume more authority than it is proper and constitutional for them to do. And so we see congressional tyranny, but we can also have presidential tyranny, where they assume more authority. And it's still tyranny. And we can have judicial tyranny. I can say that in history we've had all three. And sometimes more than once we've had congressional tyranny. And sometimes I wonder recently if we haven't had congressional tyranny. And then we've had presidential tyranny. I like to think of Roosevelt as somewhat of that, where he assumed authority that was questionably constitutional, where he basically became dictator of this country by surrender. When any of the departments surrender to one and allow it to usurp and don't check it, that's how tyranny is created, do you understand? And so this is what we're looking at here. What did Lincoln's idea, so as commander-in-chief before the war was completed, he had in place a way of reconciliation. And he wanted to reunify. That was his intent. He never recognized the Confederacy as separate. He treated them as fellow Americans. That was very large of his mind then. Not governed by emotional. In principle, he did not separate them because he was president and presiding the whole. And that's how he was treating them. Though rebellious, they were still Americans. That's a hard one. That's important to take. And So he believed that South had never legally seceded from the Union. It was a constitutional matter. Whatever the reason, it was not constitutional. You know, principles are impersonal. They have nothing to do with personality. You could hate the man, but if he's principled, you gotta love his principles, right? See, it's not about personality or affability or popularity. It's about, is it principled? Is there rationale, sound thinking, sound reasoning? Is it grounded? Has it foundation? And his foundation, again, was the Constitution, the law of the land. It was based on something called forgiveness. That's a hard one. Forgiveness. You know what forgiveness is? It's as if it never happened. That's what forgiveness is. Wow. You mean 600,000 men never really died? But it's as if treating the offender as if it never happened. Forgive and forget, it never happened. Forget what? That's a hard one. That's why they say forgiveness is divine. Revenge is human, but forgiveness is divine. You don't believe in divine things, believe in forgiveness. How are you going to get it? Okay. Some people are justly provoked. Justifiably provoked. How do you forgive something that's justifiably provoked? It takes the intervention of something greater than you to say, yeah, it never really happened. And really treat the person as if it never happened. We didn't have it in us as a people to do that. Understandably, from a human standpoint. But Lincoln had it. That's amazing. One man had it. Lincoln's Reconstruction was based on forgiveness. His intention was to, again, the ones you keep it united, the idea, keep the ideas alive, not just the geography. And of course, he wanted to woo them back into the Union with this mild Reconstruction program. It had a 3.1. We'll talk about what they were. Congress didn't like it and said, Lincoln, you don't even have any authority to do that. It's our power. You know, Congress was right. It's not always good to be right. They were constitutionally correct, true. But they did not have the spirit that Lincoln had. And that's what was wrong. You know, you could be right and wrong at the same time. It's amazing. That's why we're our worst enemies. Humanly, we're dealing with human beings. We're dealing with human responses. So we have to have a little compassion on our own history, on our own self. So he was re-elected in 1865. The Freedmen's Bureau was put in place to help the emancipated slaves, not that they were flocking to the military, they were flocking to the North for aid. Now notice there that this Freedmen's Bureau was under the Department of War. It was not a new program. It was under the Department of War, part of the cabinet. It was a war project. And so it was headed by a general. Right. So understand that's where it belonged, that the soldiers made sure that supplies and things that they were in charge, and we'll look a little closer at the Freedmen's Bureau. Surrender comes in April. Lincoln is assassinated in the same month. Johnson is made Lincoln's policy. See, that's why, you know, the assassinations and this murdering of a leader like Lincoln is an example of what we mean of our own natures, of the violence that we are capable of at all levels. That was the old way of getting rid of undesirable leaders, to assassinate them. It was as old as Babylon, Egypt. That's how they did it. Sometimes they did it more subtly with poison, right? Sometimes they stabbed Julius Caesar 24 times in the Senate, okay? All right, his own senators at Tupouche, you know, all that. But sometimes they did it, but this is the way of all flesh. And Lincoln was subject to that terrible quality in humanity. 13th Amendment comes in 1865, where slavery is legally abolished. Legal abolished. And these are the, but notice what came out of, this was to stop the black coats. you know, when they were emancipated, what happened? Black codes came about. And we'll define what those are. Black codes means that there was one set of rules for whites and another set of rules for blacks. And in order to undo this, to do this, we had something called the 13th Amendment, which actually freed the slaves. But what happened out of that came the Ku Klux Klan. Do you understand how interference legislation could provoke and exacerbate a terrible thing without knowing? But the Ku Klux Klan, a secret society of white supremacists formed to terrorize blacks, Klansmen who wore white hoods to conceal their identities, harassed and beat blacks, carpetbaggers, or northern opportunists and scalawag southern unionists, and sometimes even conducted lynchings, mob killings of blacks, usually by hanging. Booker T. Washington said this is the darkest part of the Reconstruction days, naturally so. So, but that was a reaction to the interference into the South by northern legislation. Now, interfering with the natural process that had to take place for slavery to be really undone, or the attitude toward the blacks. Remember, what is slavery? It's built on racism and prejudice. Actually, hatred and prejudice of racism. April 1866, Civil Rights Act to further protect the black man. And why do we have to have a series of civil rights acts? Because the first one isn't sufficient. The second one isn't sufficient. In 1964, we had one, and it was still insufficient. Because there are ways around the law, right? Yeah. There are ways, and every time you found a loophole, they would have to make a law against that.
Yeah.
You know this, those of you who are children, you have to make a law for every infraction because they find a way around the law. Unless the inner man is changed, no law can restrain him from resentment and hatred and all. This is the terrible reality and truth that history teaches. So there has to be a law every time there's an infraction or a new infraction.
Can I ask a question, Ms. Tam?
Yes.
You made this statement last week, and I haven't had a chance to email you because I actually disagree with it. You said slavery is based upon the concept of racial...
racism.
Well, racism, that there's an inferiority of one race to the other. But that presupposes all slavery is based upon master and slave of different races. And slavery has existed for millennia where everyone was of the same race.
All right.
And in ancient Rome, it was extremely prestigious to have a
slave. If you look
slave.
Back at last week's notes, it also said two things. The dehumanization of another people.
That's the other thing. Right.
So it could be a female, it could be of children, and it doesn't have to be race. So there is a dehumanization factor as well as the hatred and prejudice of racism. So when you dehumanize another individual, that is the basis of imposing a superior power over him.
I agree with that, but that has nothing to do with race right there. That's just nothing to do with race. That's
dehumanization?
Yeah, I
thought it was separate from racism, but I thought...
I do think it is, exactly.
He thought you meant it was the same, that you were using racism was the only
no,
basis.
No, dehumanization of another individual.
So right. Yeah, I know that has nothing to do with racism per se.
No,
racism
two
can
things,
be a subset.
Dehumanization
right.
of another individual and the hatred and prejudice of racism. But in either case, the black man was dehumanized. And right. on top of that, The idea that a particular race was inferior to another race certainly made enslaving him and buying him as property justifiable. Does that make sense? That they were not capable of anything more than that level of existence. And that was ignorance. That was not divine revelation. That's self-realization. Do you understand that?
Yes.
That's something I get for myself or passed down to me by somebody who knows. Okay. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, but I think dehumanization exists just as much if the slave is white or the master is black of a black slave. But you still have to today. You can buy
I
black
believe
slaves.
That the races, the slavery in our country,
yeah.
stick of America, okay, that's which I'm addressing, right. is based on racism, okay, and white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive me, but I think that's true.
That's true.
Can I say that?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
How else can you explain it? How else can you explain it? You don't enslave white people in a different way, you might, but right, you haven't taken your own race and put them on a plantation, as it were. You can only do that if you viewed that black individual as nothing more than less than human.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you had to.
That's right.
And that he was not to, could not be anything more, as it were. And that had to be cured. We had to do it. But that comes from, again, self-realization. Natural inequality by what? Your own estimation. By your image and your idea. We've had to come far from that. Congress, again, passes this in 1866, April. Civil Rights Act passed over President Johnson's veto. Johnson's trying to control and check congressional tyranny of interference. And they override his veto. So he is unable to do that. He's doing what a president needs to do. And we need a president today who will veto bad policy. You with me here?
Yeah.
And if he doesn't, and we sometimes question what's happened in the past, why didn't they veto that?
Mm-hmm.
What is bad policy? We need bad policy to be vetoed. I'm glad that we have a governor that vetoes bad budgets.
Mm-hmm.
He may veto it for his own personal reason, but it's good that he will exercise it. And we have a stalemate, but it is the right idea. We count on vetoes when Congress is out of order and there's that check and balance. Of course, Congress and the Assembly can override a veto, President's veto, with 2/3 vote. That's proper, and that's how we decide on these difficult problems. You can override that veto, and so we did. Again, we're acting as a people, as a whole, as a nation. This is national behavior. 1866 in August, Johnson declared that the insurrection is an end. In other words, all the 11 Confederate states were reunited according to Lincoln's plan. Lincoln died, Johnson carried it through, and therefore all of it was finished, and everything was in place, tranquility and civil authority. Congress comes to say, they come back to Washington about August, right? Summer's over, and the senators and the House come back to Washington about August, September. That's when school starts. That's when they come to gather together. And they undid everything that Johnson did. They said, no, this is not constitutional. We're going to hold hearings. We're going to have a committee, and we're going to investigate this. And basically, all the work they did was all undone, and they started from scratch. And they instituted something called Military Reconstruction Act. They undid it all. They divided all the South into 5 military districts, and they sent soldiers in to oversee. They were very strict. They did not let any Southerners take office that ever held any office. Any Southerners that had position before were not allowed to take office as part of the rebellion. They were very stringent, very harsh, and it was military government, military over, which was very humiliating, very devastating to all the process. And so when it could have ended, it was prolonged 10 years, okay? Because Congress decided their way. And they wanted to treat the South as a conquered enemy and to retaliate and to basically take revenge on their rebellion, to punish them. That's perhaps in your emotionally justifiable, but it was not treating us as, again, one people again. July 1868, we had the 14th Amendment. They imposed another thing upon, again, against the veto, and they gave the freedmen citizenship. All right? And this also implied voting. Of course, that was not explicit. No individual in rebellion, aiding and abetting rebellion, or giving comfort to rebellion should hold any civil or military office. And so it really devastated the South by not giving and leaving them any experienced leadership.
Yeah.
And all they had were novices and uneducated, unexperienced leadership as governors, as representatives. And by the way, what basis did Congress say they couldn't do that? There is the Article 2, I think, I guess I skipped it, but Article 2, Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution of the United States says that Congress decides who gets to be representative, who gets to is admitted. Remember Roland Burrs?
Yes.
And they said, we decide who gets to come in? And that's basically, I think I have noted that on Article 2, there is a page where why they say it was unconstitutional. Maybe, it's the next one. Next, it'll be further down the line. But there are certain rules in the Constitution that indicate that only the Congress and the Senate and the House determine who's qualified to come in to sit amongst them. And so that's their privilege. And they declared that the president was not the one who seats the representatives. We had the same problem recently. Roland Burrs had to meet their requirements. Some of it was stretched. He was qualified. And so we find in February 18th, 15th Amendment comes, and the rights of citizens, they were given citizenship, now they were given the prerogative to vote.
I think he just ran to get these phones. Yeah.
So, we have Johnson coming, leaving the presidency, and Grant becomes the 18th President of the United States of America.
Okay.
Oh, thank you. 15th Amendment is the right to vote. February 1871 is an important one. Ku Klux Klan Act, or another Civil Rights Act of 1871. Notice the word to try. To try, again, to curb the tide of violence and intimidation, to scare the freedmen from the polls during elections. Even today, we still have people trying to watch the voting process in places because of this bitter experience in history. All right? Because they understand the struggle that these voters have had in the past history and the fear inculcated by such animosity and hostility and violence, simply because, again, incurred by the fact that there is imposition upon the South. Is not, nothing justifies their activities, but again, it was something that was provoked by the what they thought was interference. Amnesty was given to soldiers in 1872, and removing voting and office-holding restrictions. So they began to modify, the Congress did, by 1872. Things began to cool down a little bit. You can imagine that most of the decisions were made from hot-headedness. Have some of that hot-headedness, and began to cool only after what? Towards the end of 1872, they had to modify it because it was so devastating, and because the South was suffering from lack of leadership and experienced leadership at that. Then we have Northern corruption called depression. Okay, there was economic corruption in the North. Surprise.
No, not really.
And that stopped a lot of the attention. And it got their attention away from this business of dealing with the South, so that they were dealing with their own, again, troubles. And we have 1875, the troops were removed, and finally something called Reconstruction was ended. I want to summarize here Lincoln's objective. He had a three-point Reconstruction plan. He says, let's forgive everybody. He wasn't going to give them any hoops to go through. General amnesty to all who would take an oath of loyalty to the United States of America and obey all federal laws pertaining to slavery. That was basically very general. Leaders were to be temporarily excluded from the process, high Confederate officials, just the high ones. And when one-tenth of the number of voters who had participated in the 1860 election had taken the oath within a particular state, then that state could launch a new government and elect representatives to Congress. That's all he had for them to do. And his principles were, again, let the South take care of its own reconstruction gradually, and basically the spirit was with malice toward none, with no contempt or hatred toward none, no maliciousness. And of course that was undone. He offered to pardon all Confederates, pledged to protect private property, and restore what was confiscated originally to white Southerners. He didn't want to punish Southerners or to recognize or to even reorganize the South for them. Let them reorganize themselves. He wanted Reconstruction to be a short process, and of course that was not the case. It was not acceptable, and here's the Article 1, Section 5 I was talking about. This is the basis upon which the Congress coming back, and of course all these congressmen are Northerners, right? There's no Confederate senators or congressmen among them. And so it was based upon constitutional grounds, basically hatred engendered by the war, and mostly upon the ground of party politics. And this is where we get Republicans and Democrats polarizing here. And it seemed unjust for rebels to be coming back into the Union without some kind of pain, as it were. And so that's their idea. So the plan was how to bring them back into, the Confederate States, the 11, well, they're going to have to follow the dictates and please the Congress. And they laid all sorts of restrictions and painful, harsh measures on the South. What about the emancipated slaves? A couple of things we need to note here. The Congress, that is the Northern Congress, during the war, created something called the Freedmen's Bureau, and assisted by former abolitionist organizations in the North, they succeeded, basically their greatest success was to produce and provide education for the blacks during the late 1860s. They created freedmen's schools, but they also did many other things. They provided food, clothing, shelter, and health. And notice what W.E. Du Bois, now W.E. Du Bois was the founding father, the founder of the NAACP. He's a very important figure in this response to Reconstruction and the aftermath of the Civil War. Notice what he observes. Thus did, under the Freedmen's Bureau, the United States government definitely assume charge of the emancipated Negro as the ward of the nation. And that has hardly been adjusted, if we think about it. It was a tremendous undertaking, and it was needed then. It was definitely needed then. But to keep them needing it is another thing.
Yeah.
Here, at a stroke of the pen, was erected a government of millions of men, and not ordinary men either, but black men emasculated by a peculiarly complete system of slavery, centuries old, and now suddenly, violently, they came into a new birthright at a time of war and passion. It's the worst time to be freed, isn't it? Mm-hmm. See, it was their freedom was based on military victory and conquest. It's called liberation. Liberating a people in the midst of the stricken, embittered population of their former masters. Any man might well have hesitated to assume charge of such a work with vast responsibilities and definite powers and limited resources. By the way, this department, this Freedmen's Bureau, was done gratis. There was no money for this at all. And it died for lack of support later. Any man might well have hesitated. Probably no one but a soldier would have answered such a call promptly. And indeed, no one but a soldier could be called, for Congress had appropriated no money for salaries and expenses. So it had to be a military paid personnel. The Freedmen's Bureau, the War Department created by Congress in March 1865 and given general powers of relief and guardianship, that's care, over Negroes and refugees was an absolute necessity to keep them alive and did much to solve the problem of readjustment before it became But then it became what? A political machine of a radical party used. All right, and that's the terrible aftermath of this. And then Booker T. Washington also, he was a little boy, a young boy, when the slaves were emancipated in 1863. And this is his observation.
When was he born?
What?
When was he born?
1863. He was born 1850 something.
Okay.
During the whole of the Reconstruction period, our people throughout the South looked to the federal government for everything, very much as a child looks to its mother. This was unnatural, I'm sorry, this was not unnatural, absolutely. The central government gave them freedom, and the whole nation had been enriched for more than two centuries by the labor of the Negro. Even as a youth and later in manhood, I had the feeling that it was cruelly wrong in the central government at the beginning of our freedom to fail to make some provision for the general education of our people in addition to what the states might do, so that the people would be the better prepared for the duties of citizenship. Here they were given citizenship, and they didn't know what to do with it. You see, cart before the horse. There was no preparation for freedom. We talked about this a little bit last week, about the fact that they were not ready for liberty. They were not in liberty. And unless they were at liberty, that is, they know how to judge for themselves. They knew how to not go against themselves, to be free from their own enemy within themselves. How could they be set free? And it is easy to find fault, and I think we can do that too. If we were in the places of these people, we would do no less. We would do no better. Do you understand that? Mm-hmm. We really would. Put yourself, those of you who know creation, the creation story, would you in Adam's place have done any less or any better? No, that's the point. We would not have. We are further along than these people were. We do have a little bit more experience and pain of their experiences. We ought to do better than those who preceded us, ought we not?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is easy to find fault to remark what might have been done. I think Booker T. Washington is very gracious. And perhaps, after all, that under all the circumstances, those in charge of the conduct of affairs did the only thing that could be done at that time. Still, as I look back now over the entire period of our freedom, I cannot help feeling that it would have been wiser if some plan could have been just put in operation, which would have made the possession of a certain amount of education or property or both a test for the exercise of the franchise. See, instead of giving the vote to everybody, can they not have a certain amount of literacy before they vote? We still have that problem today. Do you know that 7% of the American population are illiterate today?
How much?
7%.
I'm surprised it's that low, to be quite frank.
I think maybe those that graduate, maybe some, but I know it's getting high
literacy.
Right. Yes, true.
Is it getting less?
It's growing. A certain amount of education. Shouldn't they have a certain amount of education or even property? Because they're the ones that pay taxes, those who have property. Not because they are really elite class, but it's the property owners who give revenue, who pay the revenue. To keep the government operating, or even both, he said, a test for the exercise of the franchise or vote, and a way provided by which this test should be made to apply honestly and squarely to both the white and black races,
yes.
To both sides.
Yes.
He wished that would have happened. It did not happen. Mm-hmm. How was this? We had to learn what didn't work before we learned what does work. Do you ever go there?
Mm-hmm.
As the nations and as individuals, we have to learn together what doesn't work before we realize what will work. And then it's our own discovery. You see that?
Yeah.
That's hard growing. It's hard growing. Sometimes I advise parents, let their children make the mistakes, please. They won't fall too far because they're not too big yet. Yet. I would rather they go through all life struggles while they're still under their roof. Roof, not woof. Roof before they leave home, wouldn't you think? And you suffer all the rebellion and all the headache before you send them out to give it to others. You see what I'm saying? Let them have their day of fighting and struggle and wrestling and battle and get it over with while it is less grievous than when they're out there on their own. You make sense to you? And this is what we're going through. We're learning so that, again, we can benefit from their coming to their own. They really get it. They're not just doing it because mom and dad says so, but because they own it. They have it. They get it. And we're going to get it after we've had our fall. And then the slaves, both slaves, by the way, and the white man, had a natural aversion toward manual labor. The white master did not know how to plant or farm, or sew, or cook. Really. He lived a life as a plantation of Southern Belle, if you will, and all the rest. Genteel life. The genteel life had nothing to do with mopping and washing and cooking and farming. That was for the slaves to do. And so when the slaves were emancipated, they were helpless without their slaves. They couldn't produce anything for themselves. But as well, the black man who was freed decided that he didn't have to work anymore. Because manual labor for both white and black meant slavery. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? It was a psychology. It was a mentality. And so the blacks, and for the whole, in the beginning there, it could not have been expected that a people who had spent generations in slavery, and before that generations in the darkest heathenism, could at first form any proper conception of what an education meant. In every part of the South, during the Reconstruction period, schools, both day and night, were filled to overflowing with people of all ages and conditions, some being as far along in age as 60 and 70 years. The ambition to secure an education was most praiseworthy and encouraging, and it continues to be. But for what? The idea, however, was too prevalent that as soon as one secured a little education in some unexplainable way, he would be free from most of the hardships of the world, and at any rate could live without manual labor. And I think that's why some people want to go to college. Yeah. White-collar work, right? Yeah. They don't have to work. It's a fantasy. It's called a romantic idea. And romantic, girls and boys, means fiction. We have such romantic ideas about life, and they're fiction. So stop reading those romantic novels. They don't. Right? And notice what else Booker T. Washington learned as a young man growing up in Reconstruction. At Hampton, his one of those schools established by the Freedmen's Bureau. For the first time, I learned what education was expected to do for an individual. Before going there, I had a good deal of the then rather prevalent idea among our people that to secure an education meant to have a good, easy time, free from all necessity for manual labor. At Hampton, I not only learned that it was not a disgrace to labor, but learned to love labor, not alone for its financial value, but for labor's own sake, and for the independence, see, that's the important thing, self-sufficiency, that's our liberty, our freedom, not to be dependent, and self-reliance, which the ability to do something which the world once done brings. At that institution, I got my first taste of what it meant to live a life of unselfishness, my first knowledge of the fact that the happiest individuals are those who do the most to make others useful and happy. And that's what he believed his education was all about. Himself useful and others happy. It's amazing. And he was one of many who understood this. And there are others who did not. We look at the individual experiences, not the group experiences. Let's not classify all the white or all the black in one general pot. Yeah. Look at each individual and their struggles and their questions and their lives. And of course, what began to happen because of these ideas, they began to notice the word en masse. They began to use and see the black as one block of votes, all right? And that's dehumanizing. Mm-hmm. And that's how they still think today, in the party spirit. And that's unjust. We're still not past the idea of group thinking and collecting everybody in one bag. We must not do that. White, black, yellow, green, purple. We cannot do that. This nation was built on the importance of the individual. Mm-hmm. We have to keep going back to the right idea. That's the wrong idea. Mm-hmm. And that proves the wrong idea when we see the consequences. And so they did vote for the 15th Amendment. And they were used as a voting block to push forward congressional tyranny and Reconstruction. Booker T. Washington said this, though I was but little more than a youth during the period of Reconstruction, I had the feeling that mistakes were being made and that things could not remain in the conditions they were in then very long. I felt that the Reconstruction policy, so far as it related to my race, was in a large measure on a false foundation, was artificial and forced. And that's basically it. All the amendments and all the Civil Rights Acts were artificial and forced. And it may be the right idea, but if it's forced, it's the wrong idea. That's the hard thing to get. You violate one man's liberty in order to give another man his, which isn't. Because in some ways, the black man was never really free, and he was never really given his just due in the way of God-given rights. They were legislated rights. They were forced. and not recognized first as a human being, not recognized as an individual, and seen only as a block, all right, a mass, and all the same. And that's what they've done to many races. In many cases, it seemed to me that the ignorance of my race was being used as a tool with which to help white men into office, and that there was an element in the North which wanted to punish the Southern white men by forcing the Negro into positions over the heads of the Southern whites. There's a lot of shared guilt, isn't there? Collective guilt. And we must not pick up the guilt that isn't ours, though. Right? This was the case then, and we cannot impute to ourselves the guilt of the past, either. We're not the same people we were then. And to continue this is to never heal.
Yeah.
Allow to heal. I felt that the Negro would be the one to suffer, and he is, for this in the end. Besides, the general political agitation drew the attention of our people away, what? From the more fundamentals of what? Improving themselves in the industries, in the arts, at their doors, and in securing property. Mm-hmm. At the opportunity that was available to them to improve themselves instead of being used, right, used by a political party.
Can I ask a question here?
Yes.
Didn't Washington, Booker T. Washington, he found Tuskegee Institute?
He founded Tuskegee
That's
Institute.
That's what I thought, okay.
To improve his own race for his own people. Soon, and this goes to the idea that he understood, and this is one of the concluding points, is that the black man, in the end, was left to free himself.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
This was not free. He had to individually free himself from prejudice, from being placed in a place where he could not move. Soon black voters gained majorities, and of course they only advanced Republican ideas, and they looked to that as the resolution. Sharecropping, some of you may be aware of it, some of you maybe have ancestors who were sharecroppers, but plantations began to rent their pieces of land to former slaves, and they could reap, and they paid their rent by goods that they produced. And they exchange goods by things they produce. And sometimes that did not produce, give them any wealth or anything beyond mere subsistence. And they could not get away from the land. They were still tied to the plantation, only now as renters.
Yeah.
And they lived on mere subsistence. So that's an adversity. I just want to point out areas where Congress usurped power. And this is where Johnson was impeached because he would not cooperate. And actually, what we see here is interference. Interference in local matters. That's basically it. That's a hard one. Interference in local matters. Matters of conscience. And that's what they did. They overrode it. And they got away with it. Notice that Johnson was a Democrat and a Republican under a Republican presidency. Today, we have the idea that if we could somehow have... And notice that he was caught in a rock and a hard place. Nevertheless, we find here that what he wanted to do, that his position was, as we just stay out of the economic and social affairs of the people of the country. And that's not the role of the national government. The Freedmen's Bureau was there. And again, what they began to add to the Freedmen's Bureau was that government should not deprive the states of their judicial powers. And that's what the 13th, shall we say, the 14th Amendment, 15th Amendment, took away the state's powers to regulate their own qualifications for voters. That's basically what it did. And it was an unconstitutional move, and this is why the resistance from the South, do you understand? It took away some of their local authority. Congress passed a bill and to limit President Johnson's power, something called tenure of office act. He could not let go of any cabinet member without Congress's permission. That's a ridiculous act. But they did that because they wanted to have control over Johnson, not thinking ahead of the next presidency. If it was a Republican president, he probably would not have had this. But because it was Johnson, then it was personal, not principle. And we do that. We make laws based on personal and expediency rather than really what is good for the whole. And he was impeached for the Tenure Act. And there was, of course, intrusion upon the president, the separation of powers, it was not a valid impeachment. He was not indicted. I'm sorry, he was not charged, and he was let go. I think he was exonerated by one vote.
He was indicted. That's what impeachment is.
He was acquitted by one vote. Thank you. So let me draw your conclusions. Again, going back to the original presuppositions, the second one, congressional reconstruction was constitutional, but they could not rise above what? Regional hatred and temptation for retaliation against the southern states for the rebellion. Can we do that? We may not like, all right, in all times and all cases, but we've got to rise above in our own disposition. The temptations to revenge, to retaliate, to tit for tat, this party wrangling that we have. And they themselves, Congress, effected their own rebellion. And that's what we're looking at, Reconstruction.
Can I add something here?
Yes.
It was the harsh, revengeful treatment of the South by the Union that is the reason Harry Truman, and this is documented very well, because he was from a Confederate background, why he advocated a very magnanimous attitude toward Germany after World War II, and not the crushing harshness a lot of other people were trying to impose.
And they imposed
it.
And
it was based upon exactly what happened here.
Well, look at World War I. After World War I, there was a crushing,
exactly,
harsh treatment of Germany, and that brought Hitler.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's the whole point. What does history teach us about this business of reconciliation in the case of aftermath of a conflict? Look what we do in our own families. I mean, let's take that, make it personal there. But this rebellion, first of all, is based on being angry, being stringent, being stern, and again, grappling for Northern power and supremacy. That's what it was really all about. That was the spirit of Reconstruction. This is not pleasant. And they wanted to have they wanted Congress to be the supreme power without any check and balance from the presidency or the courts. And that would be mostly parliamentary and undo the Constitution. That's basically where it was heading. And so that was the idea of congressional tyranny. The next point here is that only in the legal sense was slavery dead. So we were, in the legal sense, was slavery dead. The daily lives of blacks and poor whites changed very little. Southerners ignored rights legislation. They just simply ignored them. And making a law doesn't make it so. You see, the newly formed Southern governments established public schools, but they were still segregated and did not receive enough funding that emancipation enabled Southern blacks to rent their own. That's an error there. Former sharecropping, that line shouldn't be there. And then, of course, black states were left to free themselves. That's basically what occurred. It would have been better to deal with the slave issue in peacetime than during wartime, wouldn't you think? And they were stuck between a rock and hard place. And I believe the progress of black was slowed because of interference. If we're going to have a recovery of any sort, national interference in local matters will always exacerbate and make it worse. That's the principle, no matter what the issue is. Sometimes we think there are exceptions to rule. There's no exception to the rule. That's how if the principle is true, it works in every case, all cases. That's hard to take. Only in the narrow sense of territorial integrity had the Union been restored. America exists, we still exist today, by miracle, to regain the high level of character and conscience that we didn't have then, to maintain what we call constitutional principles. This is a remarkable document. It was really made for our imperfections. It's interesting how we resort to the Constitution when our side is at, right? When we need protection. And we only use it when our side needs protection. And we overlook it when it offends the other side. It's interesting. But we still go back to it all the time. That's one redeeming factor, I suppose, of ours. And we can't attain this quality of character and conscience unless somewhere along the line we Americans stop socialization and standardization and education. Okay? This is what's produced that mindset that is groupthink, okay? Group action. Now, you know, there's nothing in our schools today, our public schools, that says that men are not equal, or that men do not have their own life, liberty, and property. However, they insist on group thinking, they insist on group projects, they insist upon consensus, compromise, right? Without saying or denying anything, but by emphasizing the idea of collective activity, then we do deny individual responsibility, do we not? It's silent. It's the absence. It's what's omitted and what is actually being positively presented. And what's happened here is that things that are conscience cannot be matters of anyone else's business but your own. Okay. America is yet to be cured of the original causes of the Civil War. Party spirit, regional discrimination, and the spirit of change without real advantage or improvement. Change for change's sake. That not thinking whether or not the change is an improvement or if it is, again, destructive. So here we are. We have been reconstructed physically. We now need to be reconstructed internally and realize who we are again as one people and what holds us together and revert back to those ideas and stop what was practiced, what error was practiced. So.
You make an interesting point here on page 6. I had never thought about this before, but one reason Congress was so reluctant to let the South come back into the Union was now that slaves are freed men,
the three-fifths compromise was
that's
no
gone. And therefore the South would have more representatives in Congress, because remember, it was the North that imposed that three-fifths rule to minimize representation of the South in Congress.
Well, also to minimize the growth of slavery. They tried to minimize the growth of slavery. Absolutely. But then again, it's a matter of competition. And that's what started the Civil War in the first place, was competing parties for power rather than representative government. The principle, let it ride. Let it work itself out. We can deal with any problem so long as it's dealt principally and with a cool head. All right? Not cold, a cool, calm disposition. Okay? Not this Irish ire or Scottish stubbornness nor Oriental passivity. Okay, thank you.